Welcome to the Lived Experience. I'm your host, Joel Kleber, and on today's show, it is a solo episode. So I'm going to run down a couple of news items that I haven't had time to catch up on yet, what the next episode is going to be, and I was also featured on another person's podcast, which is pretty big, during last week as well, so let you know about that. And as always, guys, if you want to support the show, make sure you follow us on social media at The Lived Experience. I've got a lot of really cool little video clips up on TikTok, especially on our Instagram profile as well, and also the YouTube channel, so make sure you head there and chuck a subscribe. Without further ado, let's get into today's episode. All right, so we're back, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Lived Experience. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you leave us a review. I read them all, and I really do appreciate it. So I'm just going to do a couple of news items as well. So last week, I was interviewed by Beck Day from news.com.au for a podcast called I Swear I Never. So I'm going to put the link into the show notes here and also upload the episode when I get it as a separate episode on here. We spoke for around half an hour, and what she wanted to mainly talk to me about was my experience growing up, well, you know, having some experience in a foster home, and that whole first time my sort of mum was taken away from me and put into a psychiatric ward. And big thanks to Tess Lazarus, who's doing some pro bono PR work for the podcast, and she's been getting a couple of these opportunities, and it's great, you know, that Beck took interest in it. You know, when it comes to mental health and the media around it, like, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you'll know my thoughts on it. But as I said, it's just so centric on just depression and anxiety. That's all you hear, depression, anxiety, and that's it. And you see every person now who has one bout of depression now starts up a charity and a podcast and all that sort of stuff, and they're all of a sudden subject matter experts. So for Beck Day to take an interest in my story in particular, and I tried to harp on the fact about bipolar and schizophrenia and schizoassociative disorder and young carers and kids who are not really considered in the mental health conversation. So that was the big part of the podcast for me. And if you do listen to it, you'll hear I'm fairly passionate about it. But it was also very tough. It's very tough for me to recount that time. So objectively, I want to get things right as well. So try and look at it objectively, you know, and go through those situations. I have blocked a lot of it out. I do remember a couple of things, but it's very hard to get really ultra specific because I was, you know, 6 or 7 at the time, but those feelings do remain, and you do have some vivid memories of what happened. So hopefully I was able to describe and convey it enough on that podcast. So please feel free to check that out as well. I was sort of thinking, you know, what could have helped and all this sort of stuff. And you know, I was asked sort of those questions, and one of the things is I see a lot of hotlines around now. So there's a lot of hotlines for mental illness and for kids helpline, and there's a Headspace and all these things. And look, I'm not saying these aren't bad organizations. They're not. They obviously do a lot of good work, which is why they get funding and people find them very useful. But I was thinking about in that situation, she asked me, like, what would have helped you? And, you know, a hotline wouldn't have helped me. That hotline would not help any kid if you've got a mum having a manic episode or a dad with schizophrenia having issues. You know, what's a hotline going to do? What's Headspace going to do? You know, what's Kids Helpline going to do? The only people who are going to really help you, to be honest with you, is 000 or the neighbors calling 000. And that's just a fact. And that's just still the way it is. And another thing is a lot of kids or young people who have a parent with mental illness, we don't have mental illnesses ourselves. You know, and things like Headspace are for kids who have got youth mental health and stuff. Like, so for me, these organizations, they miss out on a massive amount of kids who really do need the help. And that's not their fault. That's not probably what they're set up to do. But the support in place, if you listen to this show, you'll know there's things like, you know, Satellite Foundation of Victoria and Little Dreams and stuff. You know, these are real helpful things and initiatives that are being done in the community. And that's the stuff that I'm really passionate about getting more awareness from, because, you know, it would have helped me a lot. And if you are listening and you can relate to having a parent with a mental illness, or you are a parent with a mental illness, these organizations and these places where they bring kids together so these kids know that they're not alone and that this is quite normal for a lot of other people would have been really impactful. And as I said on the show with Beck, we never had that as a kid. You know, we were completely disrespected by the mental health profession, by psychiatrists and psychologists. We were treated like basically, you know, just a nuisance. And I tried to convey that enough, and hopefully, you know, if someone does listen to it, you know, in some sort of position to do something, that would do it. If you do want me to be on your podcast or anything like that, I'm more than happy to do so as well, because I'm fairly passionate about it. And then I also wanted to talk about what will help, or what I found helped me, because if you are a young person or you know a young person who's in this situation, what can you do for them? Well, the first thing I would say is look up any organization in your state that helps families or helps kids you know, whoever parent with a mental illness. And it's a tricky one because you can't rely on the parent to go and provide the help for the kid, because a lot of the parents with mental health conditions think they don't have a problem, or, you know, I don't need help, and they're very proud. You know, the mental illness is something, sometimes something they don't want to acknowledge, and that was definitely the case in my situation. So my mum would have never put my sister and or myself in touch with organisations like Satellite, because she wouldn't have seen, you know, there was a problem at all. So, you know, if you are a person who knows a kid in that situation or a young person, you can refer kids to these organisations, which I recommend you do. But the other thing is embrace your passion and really embrace it. So, you know, I post videos on my Instagram, maybe just more for myself, just more about guitar and stuff, and that was my passion. I found a couple of passions when I was younger. I believe it or not, you know, like making train models and all these sorts of things, but guitar gave me a lot of self-esteem, you know, because I was good at it, you know, and I really, really enjoyed it, and I got better and better, and I could see hard work was giving me the reward. But I think anything that's a passion for you, or, you know, that's for that kid, really let them embrace it, because it takes your mind off everything. You know, you might get left alone by your parent, which was a big one for me. I got left alone when I was practicing, so I played a lot. But it also just gave me a lot of self-esteem and self-confidence that I was actually good at something. So I think that's a really big thing. And when talking to a lot of kids and seeing this and Satellite Foundation Victoria, where they do a lot of stuff with arts and crafts and letting kids express themselves with creativity, I think that's extremely important. You know, that could be sport, it could be music, it could be drawing, could be whatever. But I think having a passion and something you really enjoy doing and just doing it a lot, I think that would have helped me more if I in my situation, as opposed to all these hotlines and you know, any lack of attempt by a social worker to really help us. So that's my biggest bit of advice. If you do know someone who's got a kid with a mental, a parent with a mental health issue, or you want to look for some advice or what you can talk to them about, I'd be basically, what do they like doing, and help them embrace that and help them do more of it and do it often. Because that's the thing that will really build their self-confidence and self-esteem. And if you want to go back to a couple of episodes, I was talking to Maddie from Little Dreamers, fantastic lady. And it really hurt me when I heard that she said that she was bullied as well. And she had this young caring duties at home, and that kids were bullying her heavily at school. And it was just, you know, school's tough enough as it is. And, you know, I had an experience where I got bullied real heavily by one kid only, really, really, really bad. And he knew I had a parent with a mental illness, and that was really, really bloody tough, you know. And that got to a point where I was wagging school. I thought about suicide multiple times, but I couldn't talk to anyone because this, you know, I just didn't have the courage at the time to stand up for myself. And, you know, it's a big regret. Whereas I've looked back now and I stood up for myself, I should have done something, would have been a lot easier. But talking to Maddie and hearing this person's story where she's got all this young caring responsibilities plus getting bullied at home, but what she found a passion in was trying to help other kids, which is just unbelievable. And that Little Dreamers organization she built from the ground up when she was young, like, just absolutely astounding. But that's the key, finding what you're passionate about and doing a lot of it, because that's where you're going to get your self-esteem from. That's where you're going to get that inner confidence from, to not getting shaken by any bullies or by people putting you down. And that's my biggest advice or tip for anyone who had a parent with a serious mental health or issues, or knows anyone who does have a kid in that situation, is just to guide them into their passion and help them. That's a really, really, really good thing to do, probably one of the most helpful things you can do. In regards to the podcast, I've got an interview coming up with a lady called Serena O'Callaghan, lovely lady who we connected on LinkedIn. And she has mental health, well, she's has mental health challenges, but she's a lived experience worker, great fit for the show with the obvious name. And she's from Sydney, but she came down to Melbourne and we caught up at a park. So we did the podcast at a park. So I'm going to upload that into YouTube, and we've got the audio, which I'm going to stitch together. I just haven't had that much time to do it because at the moment my work is completely flat out. I'm not going to go into it too much, but I've basically had a whole bunch of stuff dumped on me with pretty much no support. You know, and I'm doing well in excess of probably 60 hours, 65 hours a week now. And I don't, you know, I probably have one or half a day off on a weekend due to some extra responsibilities. And it's taking a big mental toll. You know, we can all relate. If you were in a job, a corporate job where you're overworked and all that sort of stuff, you can definitely relate to, I can definitely relate to what you're going through at the moment. But it's very hard to do a podcast and to really put 100% into something when I've got all this work, anxiety and stuff like that coming up, you know. And my job, like many jobs in Australia, are more than 40 hours. You know, you have anxiety on the weekend thinking about what's going to happen or what's this bad thing or you dread Monday. So I think that's something that's really understated in Australia. I think workplace mental health is something that a lot of companies say, oh, we're addressing it. But in regards to the actions aren't in line with what they're doing. You know, you have a lot of companies who virtue signal, we're supporting Beyond Blue or this and that, and internally the company is a shambles in regards to, you know, mental health, or do they actually care about their staff, you know? And I'm not talking about my company here, I'm talking about other ones and what I hear from people and reading stuff online. So I think, you know, Australians, we like to think we're laid back and stuff like that, but I think we're very, very hard working and we do a lot of work out of hours. You know, we do a lot of work outside of five. I think the Scandinavian countries have got it right, where there's some countries where it's illegal basically to email someone outside of 5 o'clock. You know, I'd love for that to happen here, or the 4-day work week. I don't think it will, just being the way it is. But I think Australians don't take enough time for themselves mentally, especially from work. I just, as I said before, I think work here for most people in a full-time role is not 38 hours or 40 hours. It is a lot more. And I think companies and the governments, especially to increase productivity, need to start getting companies to be fair dinkum about it. Don't just say you're doing stuff about mental health. Actually care, and actually don't be one of those workplaces where if someone does say, I've got a mental health issue or whatever, they snigger behind their back or they try and force them out of the business, which is what a lot of businesses do. So we really need to start looking at ourselves hard as a workplace, because a happier workplace and people who mentally more there are going to be way more productive. You're going to have productivity go up. They've done studies on this. It's just far more beneficial having a mentally fit workforce. And, you know, this whole attitude of Australia's of we're going to work hard and we're going to work more than 40 hours, you know, it's just something which I think is really toxic. And I'm finding at the moment, look, I like my work and I really like my job, but I'm also giving a lot to my job, whereas I've got other passions and things I want to pursue as well. And, you know, I hear about it all day about lifestyle, this and that. And, but, you know, at the moment, you know, I don't have a family or anything, so it's something I can do. But I can understand if you're in a family's position and you're working the way I'm working at the moment, it's just not sustainable, and it wouldn't be sustainable for a lot of people, which is why we're seeing the big, great resignation, which has sort of been a really big positive from COVID, where people are sort of assessing their life and say, do I really need this BS? And then making action off it. So Be kinder to yourself, and if you do need those mental health days, make sure you do take them from work. The other thing as well I've been finding about reading a lot about is kids or young people who have a parent with mental illnesses, they really have a lack of self-care and self-esteem, whereas they put other people before themselves a lot, and I find myself doing that a lot. I don't say no to much work stuff, and I don't set many boundaries, whereas I really should start setting some boundaries. And that's why I'm at a place where I'm probably really burnt out, because I don't set boundaries and I don't say no. And a lot of kids, you know, from what I've been reading online, who have a parent with a mental illness, you know, they want to please, they don't really care for themselves that much. They care for other people. They're worrying about other people first. And that's something you'd probably want to get on top of, because it can affect your life in many other ways. And the other thing I want to talk about real quickly is, you know, look, personally, me, I'm still struggling a little bit with my mum's loss. If you don't know, I lost my mum on the 7th of February. You know, it meant a lot to me, you know, and just the problem with the moment for me is, you know, I'm saving, always trying to save for a house, and, you know, I don't want to spend that money on going to a psychologist, which sounds really stupid, and this is a podcast focused on mental health and I should be spending the money on it, but it's very expensive. And for me, I don't like having to go, I don't want to go to a doctor and to get on a mental health plan. I don't need a mental health plan. What I need is just to have some sort of rebate provided to me, which I think most Australians should get. And hopefully mental health is more involved with Medicare, but it's expensive to go to a really good psychologist. It could be $300 an hour, could be $180, could be $240. And off that, you might get $100 back and you're out of pocket $180. So when I've done this before in the past, when I was 27, I went to do 6 sessions about my childhood and lived experience and that sort of stuff. And it was still costing me $180 a session. That was with a Medicare rebate. And you know, your cynicism kicks in and goes, well, hang on. The government provided pretty much no support to myself when I was younger or as a young adult with counseling or anything like that. Now you're expecting me to pay $180 to help myself when you gave me no support really in the first place. So my cynicism is like that. You know, why should I pay all this money for something that, you know, I feel as though I'm not, it sounds really bad saying this, but the government, I feel as though the government does owe me in some way, because I feel as though due to their lack of proper mental health treatment with my mum, for example, they cut her life significantly short. And that's just the way I'm going to look at it. I'll never change my opinion on that. I believe that the excessive amount of ECT, which is electroconvulsive therapy, caused her life to end short by 15 years at least. So for me, I sort of feel, well, you know, what's the support that was being provided for me? You know, it's been none. So it was really none as a child. You know, we had foster care because we had no one else to look after us, and that was pretty much, you know, that, or we would have been homeless. So that's sort of something they have to do. But in regards to counselling and psych sessions and stuff, you know, we've never really been forthcoming, had that done to us. And as I said, it's just so expensive to get help. And I really feel for people like, and this is where the hotlines for me wouldn't really do, because I'm going to call Beyond Blue or whatever, because I'm not really depressed. What I want to do essentially is deal with my, you know, my PTSD from my mum, really, from seeing a dead body in a nursing home of someone who you loved, and you're there for 4 weeks basically to help her die. Well, not to help her die, but to be there while she slowly died is very, very traumatic. And to deal with all this stuff growing up that I have never really spoken about to anyone, you know, I've done it probably 6 sessions and I didn't really get a lot out of it. So, and then, you know, the onus of going, you got to try a couple of psychologists, but why should I have to waste $180 each time trying to find a good person I match with? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a big onus on people. And you know, and quite frankly, you know, I don't want to talk to someone at Beyond Blue or someone at, you know, those hotlines, because I don't think they couldn't identify with my circumstance, and not many people could. So, you know, that's just my thoughts on that sort of matter. And what I'm trying to say is I can empathize fully with people who don't get help or find it hard to get help, because me personally, I do find it myself very hard to get help. And I can lecture people and say, you know, you need to call this number and text this number and things like that, whereas I don't do it myself. So, you know, whether that will be something where I get to a point where, as I feel as though I really, really need it, I'll stump up the cash, have to go and do it and go through the BS process. But also, you know, it's got to be done during work hours. So then I've got to take work off, and I, you know, they'll put me behind and all these sort of things. So there's a lot of considerations for people when they need to seek help, and seek help from someone good. You know, hotlines are there for crises and stuff like that, and it's fair enough. But if you actually want to speak to someone good now, you go online and try and book with someone who's a specialist in PTSD, or let's say if you've got childhood trauma from a parent with a mental illness, anyone who specializes in that, you can't get anyone for 6 months. So you can't get anyone for 6 months. So we're going to have a lot of people for at least the year with all the crises from COVID and mental health who really, really do need help, can't get it, and there's going to be serious consequences for that. You know, who can we blame for that? Well, we can blame a lot of people, but at the end of the day, the onus is on the individual, and this is why it's a bit hypocritical me saying this, but the onus is on the individual to seek out the help if they really do need it. So I might have to take my own advice and do that, but it's a process, and we will see what happens with that. In regards to the PTSD with grief, you know, I'm going to do an episode solely on grief. I'm going to play my mum's eulogy, because I think it's interesting for people to listen to. You know, I love my mum a lot, and for me to be able to share that in a digital format is very important. So we've got a eulogy on the YouTube channel and stuff like that, and I wish more people would do it, because we should be celebrating people's lives. And even though it's really, really sad, you know, it's a privilege to be able to tell people how wonderful she was and things like that. So I'm going to upload that as another episode. But yeah, no, dealing with grief, you know, long term, it's a problem. You know, people think, you know, someone tells you their mum died or their dad died and you do feel sad for them, but if you haven't happened to you, you don't really know. And then once now I know, it's a very, very tough thing, and I really do empathize with people at any age who lose their parents, and especially if you've gone through a lot with them or you're very close to them. It's something that never goes away, and you have a hole in your heart. And you know, I have a lot of photos of my mum on my phone, and I documented the last 4 weeks I did, because I want to use that information to help others. And looking through some of those photos, it's just very, very traumatic, and it brings up a lot of bad memories. And, you know, in reality, I can look through my phone during at work to try and get some content to post on social media for some other stuff, and I see a picture of my mum, and it really does throw me, you know, and then you expect it to act normal and function normal. But it's very, very tough, you know, and I really do empathize, and I feel for anyone listening who has had lost a parent, and it's very, very tough. And I would say this, if you haven't, I need to get help myself regarding it, because it was a very traumatic death for my mum, and I was involved in the whole time. But if you were involved with, you know, palliative care and things like that, you know, if you haven't spoken to someone, I suggest you do, and I'm hopefully going to take up my own advice, because the palliative care experience is very, very tough as well. It's not as easy as I thought. I had no idea what I was doing. I was getting asked about, you know, mum going on to surgery when she couldn't do any surgery at like 8 o'clock at night, having to make these decisions which could ultimately affect her life. And I had no help or no real guidance for it. We just didn't know what to do. And I don't think people in the end of life care really still know what to do with certain things. And that was a very tough experience, which I'm going to document more in detail on another episode, because I think there's a lot of people, you know, if you do go through that palliative care process and towards the end, there's some information that I've got and some things that I thought helped me might help you. I want to now talk about fake awareness. So, you know, as I said at the start, I do see there's so many people now online. I'm quite active on LinkedIn and things like that. And it's great in a way, like, you know, people are sharing their stories and things like that. I'm not going to name the organization, but this is one guy where you can see he's clearly doing it from a monetization angle, where he's been depressed once. Then all of a sudden, they start up a movement, and then it's trendy, and you know they go and do expensive corporate speaking and all that sort of stuff. And he's been depressed once, so you know. And it doesn't outrage me. And look, it might be me being very cynical, but for me, like, you know, as I said, the last thing we need is more corporates being made more aware about depression and anxiety. As I said, depression and anxiety is an awareness issue, is known. The thing is about what's the next step, or what are other issues in mental health that aren't being spoken about, you know. And that's the stuff that I want more people who are in positions or who do some sort of social media savvy or things like that to really start getting behind. Because as I said, depression, anxiety, there's enough awareness about it. It's about what's next in that to help people more with that, plus the other issues in mental health. I want to also talk about this story, which many of you might not be aware about, but I thought it was quite concerning, and I can talk about this from first-hand experience, especially with my mum's time in a psychiatric ward called Greylands in Perth. So basically, it was an article by The Guardian which said no action taken against Victorian mental health services despite more than 12,000 complaints. So basically, it says reports from the state mental health regulator show some services don't hand over complaint outcome data, but it also says they didn't act on one. So after receiving more than 12,000 complaints about Victorian mental health services, the state's regulator has not taken compliance action against a single mental health care provider in 7 years. This is despite the Royal Commission into the Victorian mental health sector last year finding systematic breaches of the law and human rights across the system. So that's crazy. You got more than 12,000 complaints and not one compliance notice was issued. Now, I've had a few people on my podcast. I think if you remember Carly Baxter, if you haven't listened to the episode where I think the psychiatric nurse started dating her mother, which is obviously a clear breach, for example, and I think Carly made complaints and stuff like that as well. You know, and this sort of stuff, you know, you think that, like any workplace, you know, it's just because these people have mental health issues, what they say doesn't mean it's not true. So I'll give you an example. So I don't know if these stories were true or not, but this is the stuff that I was sort of told. So in Perth, mum would be in the psychiatric ward, and she would probably have ECT, and a lot of this stuff wasn't true, but she'd always used to say to me, you know, Joel, you know, the nurses are hitting me, or, you know, this guy's trying to rape me, or they're trying to burn cigarettes on me, or they burn a cigarette on me. The nurse did this to me. You know, and look, you don't know, because you think your mum's not, you know, mum's obviously not all there in the mind, and you sort of fob it off. But there has to be, you know, with that amount of complaints, there has to be some truth to it. Same as nursing homes, right? You know, you put your loved one in a nursing home, you think they're all above board, and you hear about all this elder abuse. Empathize with the people working in a mental health ward, because believe me, I've been there. I know how difficult my mum would have been, especially, and I can understand. And people are people. You know, these people aren't paid overly well, and they should be, and they put up with some really, really challenging people. So there's going to be issues. There's going to be physical assaults. There's going to be all these sorts of things. And that's not saying I know any specifics of any specific cases, really. I'm just speaking from my experience. But to have more than 12,000 complaints lodged and not have one compliance notice issued to any mental health care provider is quite astounding. You know, I'm going to talk more about this with an interview I did with a lady called Serena when I have that one up next. But it's quite astounding that they don't want to rock the boat with the service providers. So the service providers, you know, South West Healthcare was one for my mum in Warrnambool, Victoria, and Greylands in Perth. You know, if a complaint is made by someone, you know, to the commission or to the whatever this thing is called, the Victorian Mental Health Services, the state's regulator, and the regulator doesn't even investigate one complaint, yet we've got the government saying we're going to put all this money into mental health, mental health, mental health, yet your own regulator doesn't investigate one complaint made by people who are in these places, who are there all the time. What does that say? And this comes to the whitewashing of money that I really want to talk about as well. So, you know, at the moment, you know, money and budgets is a big thing. Governments seem to, before an election, they donate a lot of money to mental health because, you know, mental health's a big thing. And the great thing about it is that finally it's getting to other it's getting to some organisations like Satellite Foundation and Little Dreamers who support young carers who really, really deserve it. But is it getting to where it needs to go? And, you know, things like this, when you read this, you know, the Victorian government's nearly donating $1 billion, whatever it is, to mental health, yet the regulator hasn't done one compliance notice or, I think, you know, validated one complaint. You know, 12,470 complaints, yet no compliance issues were notified. So, you know, people need to start being aware of this stuff and just don't be fooled by the blanket splashing of cash with when it comes to mental health. Where is that going? Is that going to the right places? We know that charities, for example, have a large – some charities actually use more of the money or than others. Is it going to marketing campaigns that are unnecessary? Is it going to unnecessary hotlines? What's actually being done with the money? So I'd love to see an audit of where it's getting allocated. I know there are so many organizations like Satellite and Little Dreamers who could use a lot more and do a lot more great things that actually help and actually have long-term outcomes for benefits and don't go to marketing budgets and things like that. So I'm really interested to see how the money is spent. But yeah, this report was quite concerning, and it did bring up a lot of memories for me regarding, you know, the complaints that my mum told me about her psychiatric nurses and other patients when she was in the ward. And it's going to happen, you know, if you're in a psychiatric ward with mentally unstable people, there are going to be various large range of incidents that take place between patients in there and also staff and patients. And don't get me wrong, I can completely sympathise with the mental health workers. They are some of the best and most patient people I've ever met. Mental health nurses are the most patient people and some of the most caring people I've ever met. To do that job for the money they're paid and to do those sort of shifts and deal with the stuff they do, they are absolute champions and heroes. But how not one complaint resulted in a compliance notice just shows you, like, what are these regulators doing? You know, just more government bureaucracy and red tape that does nothing at all. So I'll leave it there, guys. If you have listened to the end of the show, I thank you very much. Send me some feedback on what I can do to improve the show. What would you like to hear more about that helps me with the content and the guests that I get on? I will have a new episode next week, and I do have another interview lined up with a guy called Eamon from Lighthouse Foundation, who do a lot of work with youth as well. So I'm looking forward to that one. And until next time we do an episode, I really do hope you have a safe week, and I really do hope you enjoy the podcast. Until then, please actually feel free to reach out to me as well. My email is joelkleber@gmail.com. If you do want to give me some feedback, I really will take it on board. I rambled on for enough. Thanks for listening to the end, if you stayed to the end. And until next time, stay safe.